a remark or two about our first lesson from Deuteronomy 30, and then I think it ties into the gospel. Anyway, I'll move to the gospel after that. I think most of us, myself included, when we think about the law, and this reading of Deuteronomy is part of the law, the first five books of the Old Testament are the first five books of the Jewish scriptures, and they're referred to as the law, the Torah. So when we think of law, we think of commandments, which is a logical conclusion or a logical connection to make. And so sometimes I think we miss, even in this reading today, we miss what is really the focus here, which is love. Earlier, so Deuteronomy is, as it sits in the Bible, God has brought the Jewish people out of slavery in Egypt. That story is in Exodus, and God meets with his people, makes a covenant, an agreement with them, gives them the law. That happens at Mount Sinai. He says, I'm going to bring you into this promised land. That doesn't happen immediately because of the lack of faith on the Jewish people. They spend 40 years in the desert. At the end of that, as they're ready now, the next generation's ready to inherit the promise, Moses sits down and he says, okay, I'm going to recite to you all that's happened and the law of God. And that's why this is a Deuteronomy, the second law or second telling of the law. Well, right here at the end of this, Moses is concluding and giving a summary statement and a charge to the Jewish people. And it's interesting. So earlier in the chapter, we get this word love already, but this is where our passage began. I've set before you today life, prosperity, death, adversity, in that I command you today to love the Lord your God. So Moses does not begin with the commands. He begins with the command to love. And then later on, when he says, after, if you turn away, etc., let me remind you, I've called heaven and earth to witness against you today. I've set before you life and death, blessing and curse. So choose life in order that you may live, you and your descendants, by loving the Lord your God. Now you may recall that Jesus said, this is not only the main commandment. He was asked, what's the chief commandment? He said, to love God with your heart, soul, mind, body, and strength. But he also said, and then love your neighbors yourself. He says, on these two hang all the law and the prophets. This is the understanding of the rest of the scriptures. So it's really inappropriate and unfortunate that we, or perhaps just me, associate all of this with commandments. Unfortunate, because all of us have a very ambiguous relationship to commandments. When we're doing well and keeping them, we feel good about ourselves. But unfortunately, that seems to be a temporary posture for humans. Inevitably, we're going to run afoul of a commandment, and then we're going to live with the weight of that knowledge. And try as we might to pretend it doesn't exist or to find other ways to sort of expunge it from ourselves, that has a weight, I believe, that just irreducible. I don't think it's a product of evolution. I don't think it's something like our society or our psychologists tell us is just being sick-minded. I believe there's something fundamental in how we're created, right and wrong, and when we're on the side of wrong, something doesn't let us off the hook. I believe that's something all humans carry, perhaps with the exception of those people that we call sociopaths. So, we have an uneasy relationship with commandments. That might be why we focus on it. But we need to be fair to Moses. He leads with love. Love the Lord your God. So there's two things I want to mention here. First of all, keeping the commandments, if it's not motivated by love and an expression of love, is valueless. I hate to sort of burst your bubble, gentlemen, but if you do something for your wife that isn't motivated by love, it's meaningless. Ask her if you doubt me. If it's motivated by guilt or duty or manipulation, God forbid, but you know, occasionally we stoop that low. These aren't the right commandments to keep. Commandments, yeah. Without love, it's meaningless. That's true for God as well. If we're going to love God, the commandments need to flow out of that love. And secondly then, so without love, commandments are meaningless. If we love God, we will naturally and instinctively seek to do his will. Now, that doesn't mean keeping the Old Testament code, because Jesus let us know that the Old Testament code did not express the heart of the Father. Jesus reveals to us the heart of the Father. Now, without love, the commandments are meaningless. If we love God, we will instinctively and naturally seek to act according to the will of God. But this only brings us back to this question or problem about commandments and our ambiguous relationship to commandments. Because even love doesn't seem to consistently motivate us to keep the commandments. Again, husbands and wives, parents and children, children with parents, good friends, all of us fail, though we intend to be different. And we live and inhabit a tension between what we want to do because we choose to love and what we end up doing for whatever reason. Sometimes forgetfulness, sometimes just sheer kind of inability. And we're asked to live in that tension. Now, Jesus came to make the tension worse. You may not remember what Jesus does with the law. Jesus says, well, okay, you shall not commit adultery, for sure. But if you carry in your heart the thought, then you are guilty. You shall not murder, for sure. But if you carry in your heart the anger, the dismissiveness, the character assassination, then you're guilty. So Jesus made it worse. Now, first, we need to inhabit that tension like all lovers do. Here's your choice. I love you. I want to do something right and good for you. I failed. Now what do I do? Do I walk away? Do I pretend? Do I give up? Or do I say, because this is love's instinct, I'm really sorry, and I can't promise not to do it again, but I can promise to try not to. Will you have me back? And that's the place of the Christian journey, and that's why Jesus says, you can't follow me without knowing what's at stake here. This is going to put you through the ringer. As I said to the children, there's things that hinder us. We need to be careful. When Jesus says, you cannot be my disciple unless you do this and this, Jesus is not saying, I'm standing here and I'm looking at you and I'm saying, no, not you. That is not what Jesus is saying. Jesus is saying, you come, but you're not prepared. And so you fail. You jumped in the pool with your alb and your chasuble on. What did you expect? You're not going to swim very well. What is it that Jesus says is going to disqualify you? It's like the person building the tower. They don't have the resources to complete it. Nobody came along and stopped them. They were stopped by their lack of resources. And Jesus says the same thing is true. Unless you come having beforehand determined that nothing will come between you and I, hence these words of hating father, mother, sister, brother, losing all your possessions, taking up your cross and following. Unless you've made that decision beforehand, you're going to come to a place in which you're going to drop out of this thing. you cannot be my disciple, not because I've rejected you. I've invited you. I receive all. Let me repeat that. Jesus receives all. There's never that look on the face of Jesus that says, who brought you in? What were you thinking? It's always, come on in, beloved. But he says, you may not have it in you to complete because you didn't sit down first and think it through. Now, there's two things going on. The first is a psychological principle. This is why we do, you know, scenarios like even a fire drill. We don't do them here at St. Barnabas. But if a fire, you know, alarm went off, we'd all run around screaming, ah, we're all going to die. But if we'd practice, you'd all know, okay, where's the clearest nearest exit? Okay, let's proceed orderly. We're going to report at a certain station out here, a muster point. Not mustard. There's no hot dogs. It's just muster. Why do you rehearse this? So that in the crisis you might act accordingly. And this is what Jesus is saying. Think it through. Think it through. What happens if I make a request that goes against something you hold dear? Have you thought that one through? If not, you may find that you cannot be my disciple, not because I've rejected you, because you lacked the follow-through. Now, Jesus is saying this just like Moses, because he's saying, I've put before you life. Choose life. Brothers and sisters, I think we're all aware that the one thing that limits us, especially when we get older and we realize it wasn't finances, it wasn't education, it wasn't career, it wasn't the right people, it wasn't having the right opportunities, the thing that limits us is ourself. Why do I fail to love and act in love? Because somebody's in my way? I've chosen it. Why don't I do it? Because there's something off. And Jesus says, if you come and follow me, you will receive a new heart, a new spirit. Your inner person will be transformed and renewed. And those of us who recognize that call and recognize our longing for it, say, yes. Yes, Jesus. And he says, here's the kicker. It's got to be that and nothing else. The divided heart will never win its purpose and goal. And is this that strange? Think about this. A young man who loves a young woman hates all other women. An old man who loves an old woman hates all other women. Old women who love old men, or young women who love young men, hate all others, don't they? Even perhaps mom and dad. It's a little tricky, you know, mothers-in-laws and all that good stuff. How about this? My job's more important to you, dear, than you are, dear. I'd love to do what you want, but my job's more important. Money's more important. What's more important? Love is single. And Jesus, who knows what the gift is, when we love and are loved, we enter into what can not only be longed for, but never realistically hoped for, apart from God. Maybe you're not done hoping for it. God bless you. You go out and hammer away at whatever. I know there's absolutely no other way to be complete apart from God and his love. I know that. I don't always live that way. I still live in this tension. I still act out of brokenness and end up, you know, disappointing the one I love, whether that's God or my lovely wife. But I know that's where the answer is. And Jesus says, this good thing, please come, but know this. It's one thing, this thing and nothing else. And that could mean at some point that you're called to make that choice. So, Jesus, when he talks hard, just like Moses, he's trying to underscore the lesson because he knows there's something extremely valuable and important for us to hear. We dropped off the last couple verses of this passage, but Jesus ends with this. Let the one who has ears hear. And what Jesus is saying is this. If something in you is responding now to this call to a life in abundance and a transformation, pay attention. Pay attention. Amen.